Hello and welcome to our listeners. I'm Julia Resnick with the Association for Community Health Improvement and Health Research and Educational Trust, both of which are affiliates of the American Hospital Association. I'm pleased to be here today with one of our member hospitals to continue our conversation about how hospitals can prevent violence in their communities. This is part of an AHA-wide initiative called Hospitals Against Violence. You can learn more about the work we've done over the past year and our upcoming Hospitals Against Violence Day on June 9th at aha.org. We're here today with one of the hospitals from our Chicago community, Advocate Christ Medical Center. I'd like to ask all of our speakers to introduce themselves so that our listeners can start recognizing your voices.
Kelly Guglielmi, I'm the CMO for Christ Hospital.
This is James Doherty. I'm the Trauma Director for Advocate Christ Medical Center.
I'm Wendell Ullman, Vice President of Mission and Spiritual Care at Christ.
As we start our discussion, I think it would help our listeners to have a better understanding of the community that you serve. Can you give us a little background and speak a bit to how violence emerged as a health issue?
I can give a little bit of background of our role as a trauma center. Advocate Christ Medical Center has been a level one trauma center serving the Chicago area since 1985. We are uniquely positioned geographically in the south suburbs of Chicago, and due to the absence of level one trauma centers on the south side of Chicago, we are the main trauma center for most of the south side of the city, as well as the south suburbs of Cook County, as well as being the primary level one trauma center serving much of Lake County, Indiana. So we have a very large population of patients that we serve, and because of that, we're a very busy trauma center. In addition to that, because we service a large number of high crime areas in the city and in the south suburbs, we have a large amount of intentional trauma due to gunshots, stabbings, and assaults. So that is an area that, unfortunately, we see a lot of patients with those specific types of injury patterns.
What drove your hospital to get involved in violence prevention work?
As a level one trauma center in the state of Illinois, we are required to engage in injury prevention. That's part of our mandate from the state. Most trauma centers, this amounts to work revolving around safe driving, preventing elder falls, car seats for children, bicyclers wearing helmets, those sorts of things. But we found that because we have such a large number of patients who are victims of intentional trauma, this was something that we always had an interest in getting involved in violence prevention as part of our injury prevention mission. And I think it sort of started. I think Wendell can give some of the background in terms of how it all started with our specific injury prevention initiative.
In 2004, we had a root cause analysis that was put into place to try to do better work with treating the families of those who came in injured in our emergency department, injured by violence. And out of that root cause, we developed an injury prevention outreach program committee. And that committee started looking toward, looking for a community partner and someone that was working in the community to stop violence in the community, someone we could work together with. And that group reached out to an organization called Ceasefire, and today it's known as Cure Violence, but it was then called Ceasefire. And it was started by Gary Slutkin in 1995, and he was an epidemiologist, and he founded Ceasefire. He'd spent about 10 years researching transmission of AIDS and other illnesses in Africa. So came back to the States and tried to apply the same rules for epidemiology in addressing violence, and stopping the transmission was how he decided to do that. So he'd been in Chicago for about 10 years, and we connected with him. The interesting thing is the RCA was being part of an initiative that our administration was involved with. And Ceasefire at the same time had a plan in place to work with hospitals. They'd never done that before. So ours was the first partnership they had with a hospital. And now, 10 years later, they're connected with dozens of hospitals around the country with the same kind of program. So we've been doing this for over 10 years, and we've had the same relationship with CSFARE during that time.
For those who are unfamiliar with CSFARE, can you talk a little bit more about what is involved with that program and what your hospital does in violence prevention?
Sure. CSFARE, they're a community-based organization. They try to mitigate violence in the community by stopping retaliation. So they'll go into a setting where there's been some violence, and they'll talk to whoever's been involved. And what's really good about CSFARE is they are from the communities. They live in those communities. They know the people involved. They're from the same kind of background, but they're people who have come out of that background, turned their lives around, and want to better their community. And so that's what they try to do. They try to mitigate the retaliation. And what they do with us is when a person comes in who's injured by violence, in our emergency department, our chaplains contact CSFARE. We have 24-hour chaplain coverage in our ED, which isn't the case with every hospital. We understand that. But chaplain contacts CSFARE. They send a hospital responder over to our emergency department, and the hospital responder visits the victim, if possible, in the emergency department, but also contacts the family. And a lot of times the families come in obviously very upset and sometimes want to go and do something. And CSFARE helps to lighten that situation and to talk that through with people.
Yeah, and I think that when we started this, we were very naive. We did not really know how to do injury prevention. We had patients, and we had access to patients, and we had access to families, but we didn't have an infrastructure out in the community to do this kind of work. And so at the time, reaching out to CSFARE, in retrospect, just makes sense. They had an infrastructure. They had a street organization out in the community. They had people who knew those communities very well and knew some of the gang elements that are involved in some of those communities. And essentially what we did was we gave them access to our patients and their families. We provided mm-hmm. them an opportunity to come in to see our patients in a, you know, if you think about it, it's a very susceptible moment when a patient has been hurt as a result of violence, and they're given the opportunity to step in, talk to the patient, talk to their family, and perhaps interrupt that cycle of violence. And that's why the responders are often called interrupters. That's what they yeah. see their role as, to sort of step into that situation and try to diffuse some of the violence that that occurs after a violent event takes place, the subsequent violence that adds on to that and sort of spirals out of control.
And personal credibility is so important.
Yeah, and that's
we just
right. We
nobody who works in a hospital has that kind of credibility.
I think one of the things that has been really very effective is partnering with them and then also helping to fund the CSFARE organization and the interrupters here at the hospital and providing some support. And perhaps, Jim, you can talk a little bit about how that's evolved.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. You know, this started very small. It started where we just had a few zip codes where CSFARE had organization had in certain communities, and when they realized this opportunity provided them, we sat down and we said, okay, let's grow this program. Let's take it beyond just a few neighborhoods. Let's make it, you know, and it was just gunshot wounds at that time. We said, let's make it all Chicago neighborhoods that come here, and then then we said, okay. And not just gunshot wounds. What about stabbings? What about assaults? Mm-hmm. And then we said, why just Chicago? What about these south suburbs? And then we said, what about Indiana? And so the program grew. And as it grew, we were fortunate that our administration recognized the growth, and certainly Wendell was a driving force in this, in getting more support from the hospital itself to support this mission. And we eventually funded these positions at ceasefire through the hospital. In addition to that, we established a case manager who then followed up with these patients beyond just the initial interaction and actually followed up with them as outpatients as well. And I think, Wendell, you can speak to that.
I had two ceasefire hospital responders for many, many years, and we've needed three. And in the last year, our medical staff has decided to fund this third responder. We really appreciate that.
I think one of the things that was particularly exciting about that is that it was an example where we were ready to take the whole project to another level, and conversations had been occurring. Clearly, it's all over the media, the violence in our city, all over the national media, in fact. And so amongst medical staff, there had been a good deal of conversation about mitigating violence. And then after having some conversations with Wendell and with Jim, as well as some of his other trauma colleagues, we started to talk about how do we engage the entire medical staff. And we, in fact, brought Dr. Slutkin in to educate our medical staff at our biannual medical staff meeting last year. And he educated them with regard to the concepts of treating violence as an infectious disease, as an epidemiologic problem, and that we tend to catch violence from our neighbors and our families and our environments. And so the medical staff really embraced that concept as physicians, and that resonated. And as a result, the medical staff supported a $500,000 donation to grow the program here at Christ and, in fact, fund an additional interrupter. And this also started further conversation about what else can we do? How do we grow beyond that? What are other opportunities? And so we more recently have developed a violence prevention kind of task force, a work group. And we've engaged our Department of Psychiatry, as well as the trauma surgeons, Mission Spiritual Care, as well as some community health workers, to start to look at ways in which we can partner and grow even further beyond mitigating the initial risk for retaliation and further addressing other issues that families need who are victims of violence. And so we're starting to partner with some other folks in the community, which I think is going to be an exciting extension of our program.
And I think the medical staff funding is really critical for that and was a major opportunity for us to take this beyond the ceasefire partnership, which is what we started when we were sort of just really trying to see if we could do this. But now we've reached a point of maturity where I think as an institution, we're now moving this in other directions and trying to expand this beyond that ceasefire partnership to other opportunities as well.
I think one of the important things that keeps coming up is partnership. And this is a unique partnership because even when it started, we had a community organization that had credibility in this community. We had administration who was definitely behind us moving on this. And then we had their physicians, our trauma surgeons. And without them, this would never have happened. So we had the physicians, the community, administration, and then our hospital staff. So there's not a lot of, and we all wanted to do this. Very often you get into these political situations where two are good for it and the other one kind of comes along. But in this case, everyone wanted to do this because we knew it was the right thing to do. Early on, I used to go to the National Network of Hospital-Based Violence Prevention Program meetings. I would talk about our program that it was funded or partially funded by the hospital, and everyone just would look at me. Because it's so rare that hospitals actually fund these programs. Across the country, you'll see that's true. Mm-hmm. And but we've had it as part of our mission now for so many years, and the program continues to grow.
Yeah, and it's very unique, but our institution is unique as well. Part of this is that, you know, trauma is very often practiced in academic institutions or in county or municipal hospitals where they might have some access to public health and academia. You know, we're a private hospital, a non-for-profit, but we do have this strong commitment to mission and spiritual care as part of our mission. And so that sort of spurred this on The fact that we do more than just patch the patients up, you know, there's our commitment is much greater than that to our community. And I think that that the hospital, because of that mission, has really just been on board with this from the very beginning. And we were very fortunate. But I think there are other institutions like that out there. And I think it's just finding the right partnership and finding the right people. On paper, it makes total sense. You know, you look at it, you say, boy, why didn't someone think of this earlier? But honestly, it really just took having the right people in the right room at the same time. I've said it's almost like the Reese's peanut butter cup, the chocolate and the peanut butter. You know, they don't make sense together, but when you put them together, it's great. It's the same thing. This was something that circumstances sort of brought us together in the same room with Ceasefire, and both sides just said, wow, this really makes sense. We should partner. And and fortunately, we had enough support within our institution to do that, and it's just grown since then.
Of course, my perspective is it's a divine appointment, but that's mission and spiritual care.
Yeah, right. Well, and I think what has been exciting as well to take it to this next level is the physician engagement, even beyond just the trauma surgeons who are out there dealing with it day-to-day, but to have the support of the rest of the medical staff believing in what's good and right. And I think that that's just been such a wonderful thing to see. It was such an easy lift. Would have imagined that it would have been an easy conversation to have our medical staff donate $500,000 to an organization, and the feedback that I've received from the physicians, they all feel very good about it. They were so impressed with Dr. Slutkin when he came to talk about the program and the Ceasefire Cure Violence program, and it really started to build further energy beyond just the interrupters, but to other organizations and other opportunities to partner out in the community. So that's been exciting.
Well, Cure Violence has been, you know, heavily researched as an organization. And when Dr. Slutkin came, he came as a researcher. And, you know, that's not usually what you get from a community organization presentation. So I think physicians came up to me after the presentation. They were really impressed.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And it was a doctor speaking to other doctors in a language that they can understand and feels that they can have an impact. So that, I think, has been wonderful. As part of our what we're doing now is through our working group on violent prevention to look at other ways that we can reach out to folks. For example, the incidence of PTSD in this population of people who've been injured as well as their families is extraordinarily high. And so we're working on partnering with psychiatry as well as some community organizations to address and treat acute and chronic post-traumatic stress disorder. And so that's been actually exciting to take that on as another opportunity to potentially mitigate future violence, either violence against themselves or violence against others, because we know there's a higher incidence of suicide or violent acts in individuals with post-traumatic stress disorder. So I'm taking a look at ways to address this, because we know medically this diagnosis can be treated both acutely and chronically. So that's been going to be one of our next projects.
That's really exciting, and exciting just to see how the work is evolving and it's just growing. It's really great. And I know a lot of hospitals that are considering getting into working on violence prevention are identifying it through their community health needs assessment process. And I think that your hospital prioritizes this as well. Do you have any insights as to how that became a priority, or was it just growing on the existing commitment to violence prevention?
Yeah, I think it was growing on the existing commitment. It's such an important part of what's going on in the communities of the south side of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And the south side of Chicago is areas that we cover, so it seemed like an obvious part of our assessment.
Yeah, I think even though it did grow very organically, you know, from just our mission and the communities that we served, I do think that that's sort of there always was that recognition that this was a big part of our community needs assessment, and I think it just sort of naturally fit into that niche that was there. And I think that that obviously for every institution is different. Every institution has the community that it serves, but I think that that this is a good example of how a program can grow from something very small and from some pretty straightforward out-of-the-box thinking. Sometimes things just make sense, and this is an example of that.
Mm-hmm. And since you've been doing this work for a while now, what results or improvements are you seeing as a result of the programs?
I can tell you that that some preliminary research that CSFIRE did shortly after the program started did show some reduction in recidivism. It was a limited study, and right now, over the last 5 years, they've expanded the database that they're collecting. And with the information they're receiving from this hospital, as well as some of the other hospitals that they have similar programs set up, they have an ongoing data collection. Hopefully, we'll see much more compelling data over time. Certainly from the standpoint of individual patients, we've seen patients who, as a result of the CSFIRE interaction, have relocated to other states, have obtained through connections with CSFIRE employment, which has helped them to move out of dangerous neighborhoods. We've seen kids who have been able to get out of the gang life and into more stable living situations. So we've seen quite a bit in terms of individual stories that are tremendous wins. And I think that we're going to see some of more compelling data in the next few years.
Yeah, the study we did, correct me, Jim, if I'm wrong on this, but it compared a group who used our CSFIRE services against a group that, a similar group that was before we had CSFIRE.
Yes, there are historical controls.
Right. And the CSFIRE group was about twice as likely as the treatment group to not be shot again.
And again, this was very early in the program. This was when we were limited to a few zip codes. Mm-hmm. Since then, the program has become much larger, and so the data we look at is much larger.
It was actually before we had the caseworker.
Yeah, exactly. And so the program has grown quite a bit beyond that. And so the amount of data is much larger, which is one of the reasons why it's taking more time to sort of put all that together and see the results. But certainly there's quite a bit of anecdotal data support that it is making a difference.
That is great, and I'd love to see the results when the research is completed. And then last but not least, you all have been doing this for a while, and I'm sure you've learned a lot throughout the process. What lessons have you learned or words of wisdom that you'd like to share with other organizations that are embarking on violence prevention work?
I think a couple of themes that came through just through this podcast are what resonate with me. I think early on it was really engaging the physicians, the administration, mission and spiritual care, people who were motivated to take this on. Partnering with an organization such as CSFIRE and looking at partnering with other communities. And it really was about really developing some opportunities, identifying who's engaged to follow through with developing it, and then finding those partnerships. And then moving it along. It takes some passion. It takes some work. And I have to say, such an amazing thing that our trauma surgeons, coupled with their mission and spiritual care, started this from nothing and has grown. So I would say it's all about really that the engagement, the passion, and partnering.
Yeah, I would say that to not be afraid of engaging community partners. Mm-hmm. It's so much simpler just to have a pure medical model that you fully control in the hospital, but you don't always have the right people involved.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got involved with CSFIRE, it was a whole different group of people, a whole different culture of way of thinking, a whole different background of people, and who have been very successful in ways that we could never be. And so I think what I've learned out of this is to think outside of the box, but to embrace different ways to look at things, engage the community in ways that you wouldn't normally think as a medical group.
And I think, good ideas start small, and you have to be willing to experiment. I mean, this was, we were, starting from scratch here, and, even little things like who's the one who's going to contact the interrupters, how's that going to work, how are they going to have access to the patients, all those things are can be daunting. But mm-hmm. if you recognize the need and you have the right people involved and everyone on board, as Kelly said, thinking the same way that this is something we have to do, you can break down those barriers because I think all of us want to help patients and we want to help their families, and we all see these as tragic situations. And if people are committed, they'll work through those process issues, and it'll come to fruition, and that's what we saw.
Well, that is great, and hopefully that will provide some much-needed inspiration to our other hospitals. So I want to thank the three of you for joining today, and we so appreciate your commitment and your passion to your community, and we look forward to learning more about the work that you're doing. So thank you so much.
Thank you.